And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all the shows at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you are not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Thank you so much in advance.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, it's the third act of the fade-out and the mystery deepens, but it's always darkest before it gets pitch black. Plus, we talk the latest news, review the latest reviews, and are just generally really sort of marvelous, which is not a reference to any particular comic book company. So sink into the rich Corinthian leather and enjoy the Retson, because we do it all for you, so have it your way. We try harder, stronger than dirt, and like that. Happy motoring, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 918 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. If your announcer starts to have an aphasia fit there, you know that you should call emergency 911 right away.
Whatever it is
in your country. Because what is it in Great Britain? It's 119 or something.
999. So much smarter.
Yeah.
We should adopt that.
What is it in Canada?
911.
Oh, 911. Okay.
Yeah, Canada is on the 10-digit dialing pattern.
There you go. Ashley, what are you up to this week? Ashley is here with us. Hello,
about
Ashley.
5'7".
I am panic rewriting Aurora and the Eagle.
Oh, really? Why are you panic rewriting?
It was not as good as I thought it was going to be, according to my notes.
Uh-oh. So how rough is that? How rough is it to go back and do those rewrites?
Oh, you know, I cry at everything. So I cried a little bit. And then I took a day away, and it's fine. It's fine when notes are actually helpful or insightful or thought-provoking. So that's great. I learned how to call a gas company and get your gas turned on for the first time.
Nice.
Because we're moving, and I never lived in a place with gas before. So that's been a real treat.
They don't have gas in Canada?
Not in any house that I lived in. We all had electrical stoves of the future.
Yeah, enjoy it the first time you have a major earthquake and you need to turn off that gas. Not to put fear of anything into you, but
at this point, I've lived through like a 7 earthquake, so yeah, earthquakes are cool. They're chill. And it's raining in Los Angeles, so like everyone is out of their mind. It was hail.
I saw that.
And, like,
I saw that.
The world imploded. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look, Matthew's here. Matthew, what's going on with you?
I am celebrating 1 year of wearing a mask for literally 17 hours a day. We actually got the email at work today saying that, hey, 1 year ago today, we started having to wear the masks to work. And of course, I sleep with a mask. So literally the only time that I'm not wearing a mask is between about 4:30 and 8. So right now you are hearing me unmasked, which no one ever gets to do.
Yeah, it's really funny because at this time last year, we kind of knew something was going on and the university was like, hey, you guys, you know, just be prepared. We're weighing these options day in and day out. And of course, I had a class where, you know, it's heavy hands on. And so I was telling the students, OK, if we are out for 2 weeks, here's the plan. And then I was like, more than likely, we won't be here the week after spring break. So here's our plan. And then, like, literally an hour after I sent out that email, because it would have been almost a year ago today or yesterday, probably yesterday, since it was today, Tuesday. So yesterday, for those of you who are listening. Hello, future people. But literally it was, spring break is coming up. We're not coming back after spring break. And so I had to scramble and get equipment into the hands of these students for extended checkout so they could go and finish their projects for the rest of the year. Of course, all the projects that we planned all fell apart. And so they all had to go into one-on-one projects. But yeah, it's kind of crazy to think back a year ago to where we were. So, yeah, I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we're here today. I've got my first shot. Matthew's got both of his shots. Ashley, have you gotten a shot yet?
No, the emails that I get from everywhere where I try to get my shot are like, LOL, go F yourself.
Yeah.
Because I don't fall into any of the brackets currently available. Also, Los Angeles, one of the hotspots, has been a hotspot for almost a year, is behind all other counties in the United States.
Have you looked at like going out to Riverside or something like that and seeing if they have any extras?
I don't have a car.
Oh, that's right. Public transit in California, curse you.
Yeah, nope.
Rodrigo, have you had both of your shots yet?
Yeah, I've had them.
Well, good. I my next one comes up in April, so we'll see how that all goes, but everything is fine. So, Rodrigo, what's been going on with you? Did I ask you that already? No? We asked Matthew. So, Rodrigo, what's been going on with you?
Oh, you know, just excited about getting to the end of the fade out.
Oh, yeah? You didn't care for that much?
Well, you know, it's like you break something into, you're like, this is about Hollywood writings. We're breaking it into three acts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I better get a third act out of this.
All right. We'll talk about later
whether I actually did get a third act.
We will talk about this later in the show. But first, let us do some news.
Matthew, don't read this line. Holy lizard man, Batman. Garth Ennis and Liam Sharp are teaming for Batman Reptilian. They're teaming. They're not terming. That's entirely different. Apparently, the upcoming series is showing something far more frightening than The Dark Knight terrorizing Gotham City, tracking down Gotham's various villains. Six-issue miniseries from DC Comics kicking off this June. I don't know. I wonder if it's got anything to do with Killer Croc.
Maybe. I would be very surprised. It seems like it's a combination of both or not. I am very excited because was the last time that Garth Ennis did Batman was Holy Terror? Or not, yeah, no, not Holy Terror, the one within the sewers, the one with the cult, that one. Didn't he do the cult?
That wasn't Garth Ennis.
That wasn't Garth Ennis? Oh,
no,
I thought he did
Jim
the cult.
Starlin.
Who did the Garth Ennis did some Batman stuff, though, back
in the
day.
I want to say Garth Ennis just did the Batman's Grave, didn't he?
Oh, maybe.
I thought that was Garth. Maybe it was Warren Ellis. I don't know. I mean, they're the same guy changing their name. But yeah, Ennis is one of those guys where I haven't seen him on a lot of things lately. Since the Boys ended, I don't remember seeing Garth on anything high profile. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it. A lot of other people are not, but that comes out on June 22nd.
More Batman. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm excited for anything that Liam Sharp is on. And, you know, Liam Sharp also worked on Wonder Woman. And I have more Wonder Woman news. We have read Batman Black and White. And this week, DC Comics released Superman Blue and Red. Get it? And in June, the publisher will release Wonder Woman Black and Gold. You know, those classic Wonder Woman colors, black and gold, right? Black and gold. Yes, black and gold. The 6-issue miniseries is being released as part of Wonder Woman's 80th anniversary. God forbid we did anything else for a woman. And the series will feature a variety of artists and writers telling tales from across the various time periods in Wonder Woman history, considering the rollout that Superman and Batman got for their 80th. This is cute.
Yeah, I know they have some other things planned for Wonder Woman's 80th anniversary. They've got the whole cover thing that they've done with Robin and Catwoman in the past. So I know that they have that coming up. DC... I think DC is the one that pioneered these black and white comics, but pioneered, let's tell these tales of Batman in black and white.
DC pioneered black and white comics.
Yeah. And in addition to Blue and Red, which just came out, they did Harley Quinn Black, White, and Red with splashes of red.
They did that before Wonder Woman.
Yeah, they did. And of course, Marvel jumped on the boat with Wolverine Black, White, and Blood. And then I think they're doing something similar with Deadpool, where everybody's playing on this. So it seems like there's some nose tweaking going on.
Wolverine, brown, orange, and stubble.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm actually kind of psyched about it, even though Ashley's right. Black and gold doesn't really have anything to do with Wonder Woman. Although it's better because you remember 10 years ago during the New 52, which was 10 years ago, they actually changed Wonder Woman's costume to eliminate all the gold, which is stupid because they're dumb. But I'm really looking forward to this based on what happened for the 80th anniversary of The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily highly, invested or awaiting things with the mousetrap bated breath. But But I'm interested. I definitely want to see it. I'm still mad that the 80th anniversary of The Flash was all about a character who was only 70 years old.
Yeah. I am looking forward to the day that DC Comics applies this concept to Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, and it's just blue and gold. And so the whole issue is nothing but tones of blue and gold tones. So I'm looking forward to that. So.
Well, Booster's 35th anniversary is this year, 1986.
I don't think they necessarily have to do this for any kind of an anniversary, as Ashley just said, with Harley Quinn. But I suspect we're going to see a lot more of these piling on our shelves in the coming years. So
I think we're coming up on Blue Beetle's 90th anniversary, if my time is right.
Nice. You can tell that it must be getting close to solicitation time. I suspect we'll have the full listing of the DC solicitations later this week. But in June, the Heroes Reborn saga comes to an end over at Marvel Comics. I know it feels like it was over just before it starts, but regardless, Heroes Return, number one, shows us the fate of Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness's version of the Marvel Universe. The Heroes Reborn saga comes to a close. Quote, Heroes Reborn presents a world without Avengers where the Squadron Supreme took their place. Now a group of otherworldly heroes have assembled and are ready to fight for the mantle of Earth's mightiest heroes in a glorious superhero slugfest that will shake the Marvel Universe to its core, unquote. And somehow the real heroes have to come back from that. Heroes Reborn kicks off its 4-issue run in May. Then Heroes Return arrives in June. You excited for that, Matthew? You remember the last Heroes Reborn.
Yeah, I hated it. I'm kind of psyched because I enjoy Aaron's Avengers run, and what they've been doing with the Squadron Supreme has been simmering in the background since the first issue of the new Avengers run, which I think we're up to issue 45 now.
Mm-hmm. Or volume 45, who knows?
Well, I think I just reviewed Avengers 44 or 45. I can't remember which. But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what they're doing with the Squadron. And I mean, granted, as someone who has to, I don't have to, but as someone who chooses to know these things, this is going to be like the seventh individual incarnation of Hyperion, which that's fine. It's a thing. Sure. I'm kind of looking forward to their take on Superboy and the Legion with Hyperion and the Imperial Guard. That should be interesting, which is coming up as part of this. And I don't know if it's going to have interiors, but it's definitely got covers by Chris Sprouse, who is,
I think,
you
those
know,
are
variant. Notch.
You're looking at the connecting covers. Yeah, I think those are the variant connecting covers.
Either way, man, it's Sprouse. Sprouse can, you know, he could draw a plant and I'd be like, hey, that's a great plant, Chris Sprouse. But if you give me, even for a split second, that weird Thor with a shovel in a block of ice, I'm going to find you. I'm going to find you, Jason Aaron, and I'm going to sternly point my finger at you, and I'm going to say, you gourd-bellied codpiece!
Well, you only have a month and a half to wait, so there you go.
Yeah,
he's going to go
one way or the other.
I will find you, just like Zod in this.
That does sound like me, yeah. That's exactly how I would think.
All right, what else? DC Comics has announced DC Pride, an 80-page anthology comic featuring LGBTQAI+ characters from across the DC universe, including Renee Montoya, Alan Scott, Midnighter, Apollo, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, and more. DC will also release a series of Pride-themed variant covers showcasing DC's leading characters through the month of June. Check out the Major Spoilers website for a complete rundown of all the titles arriving in June, along with additional comics and titles DC Comics is releasing during Pride Month.
Yeah, and I guess throughout the year, because I was going through their press release that they sent us, and there's a lot of stuff that they have coming out, not just this anthology, but individual books and titles and stuff that may be targeting not the comic book shops, but bookstores. So go check that out.
I like the fact that they are now actively admitting that Harley Quinn is at least bisexual, which is great.
Yeah, the most recent, what is it called? There's a Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy book that's coming out. It may be coming out during this Pride Month, where it basically is saying that these two are a couple. So, yeah.
They're
well,
so
and I think they have been since 1997 or so. But
yeah, well.
Apparently, Alan Scott, the original Golden Age Green Lantern, Alan Scott has come out in a recent issue, which I think is just actually really kind of cool.
Stealing that Earth 2 continuity?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, yeah, I appreciate it.
I mean, yeah, that's how
the original take was Robinson made the Earth 2 Green Lantern gay because they had to retcon away Obsidian. And he felt like if he was going to take away a gay character, he was going to put one back. But I really like the fact that this is, you know, an old man. This is a man in his 70s finally admitting and coming to terms with the fact that he's gay, and he has been for a while, and he's always known it, and it's just a thing. And I love the fact that it's an adult character coming out as an adult, you know, rather than a new character popping up and going, yep, woo.
Or, yeah, you know, yeah, a reboot of a character and then suddenly killing his lover, so.
Right.
I like mean, that is the deal. It's like they... All of these, right? You can see that they first tried them out in another sort of continuity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like they usually, characters get to be gay somewhere that's not the main comics. And then if that works out, then we bring them over and say, yep, actually, it turns out that that's what it was. Right. So, you know, not perfect, but probably the DC LGBT characters are higher profile than the Marvel kind of general cast of characters, which is like, I guess, Iceman and Northstar.
And Billy and Teddy, I guess, yeah, would probably be
Billy
the most
and
famous.
Teddy just got married. I would say
freaking
they're probably...
finally!
They're only like 15 years old, honey. It's not like...
Well, now they got to be like 21 at least, right? To be married, mm-hmm, right? Well, I mean, we don't get you married before we're 21, children. Make it 25.
Literally, the or, characters.
Like me, 31, so...
You were 31?
Yeah, when I married my wife. I was 31 when I married my wife. So, dear listeners, you can join in the conversation about these stories and a whole lot more over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free. Chat it up in all the chat rooms. Share your cat gifts. Talk about your comic books. Talk about your TV shows and all that other stuff. Or if you are a Patreon member over at patreon.com/majorspoilers, you can link your Patreon account to the Discord, and then you get access to even more channels, including the Dueling Review channel, where Matthew and I review comics live for people who are in there Thursday nights, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. That's Central Daylight Time for those of you that don't have Daylight Savings Time or who Daylight Savings Time hasn't kicked in yet. Adjust your clocks and calendars accordingly. But Thursday nights right there in the Dueling Review secret Discord channel that's only accessible when you link your Patreon account to the Discord. Find out more over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right, we should probably do some reviews. I'm sure that there are some comic book reviews that need to be done. And Matthew, apparently, while Wonder Woman is celebrating her 80th anniversary,
yes,
Deadpool is celebrating his 30th anniversary. Who knew that Deadpool has been around for 30 years? I'm sure
that's
Rob
horrifying.
Liefeld just was shouting it from the rooftops.
I was going to say.
Yeah. It's horrifying to me that Deadpool is 30 years old. And the reason why is because
you remember that very first appearance.
Well, with the exception of Harley Quinn, I think he's the newest character to really hit it big in comic books. And he's 30 years old. But, again, you know, the age that just creeps up on us. Yeah, I had the issue. I bought New Mutants number 98 off the stands. And I was like, I don't like this. And I threw it in somebody's quarter bin. And I think I sold it like, you know, three for a dollar. And now it's worth a scramptillion bucks. But Deadpool, Nerdy 30, number one, is, first of all, a $6 comic. The art team and the writing teams do vary. Basically, everybody who has had a meaningful run of Deadpool is in this book. Joe Kelly is in here. Gail Simone is in here. Daniel Way, Scotty Young. The guy from that Rodrigo and I love from Mission Hill is in here. He wrote Deadpool for a while. You remember Jim. Fabian Nicieza is in here. And yes, Liefeld actually writes a story in this book. And it's the presence of Liefeld in this book that I think really will hammer home to you why I'm giving it 2.5 slices of meatloaf.
Why are you giving because it 2.5 slices of meatloaf, Matthew?
It's all over the place. In 30 years, Deadpool has been through concatenations and various permutations of ridiculous and just amazing elasticity. And so, you know, like Spider-Man, who's had different eras, but not like 20 or 30 of them in quick succession, Deadpool is all over the place. So we start with the Joe Kelly story, and it's Joe Kelly's era. And then, you know, we bump right into a Fabian Nicieza story, and it's the Fabian era Deadpool. And these are virtually different characters. So we get a story where he's hanging out with his best friend Cable. Actually, Cable has gone back in time to his first birthday and found baby Wade and is about to kill him in his crib when suddenly another Cable appears from a different future to tell him, don't do that. We get a 16-year-old Wade at his high school senior prom hanging out with Wolverine, and it's a completely different thing. We get a team-up with Agent X, written by Gail Simone, that's really kind of a wonderful little story, and they fight Stiltman. And, you know, you got Stiltman, you got Matthew, but there's also stuff in here that is completely inexplicable. There are moments where it is just way, way, way too over the top, wacky, hey, let's point and laugh at the camera stuff. And there's one story where he's in a coffin under the ocean for a while, and they're referencing, I mean, it's super metatextual. They're referencing Ryan Reynolds, who played Deadpool, who had that movie where he was in a coffin. It's kind of exhausting. And the last story is a Rob Liefeld story where the hero ends up being Rob Liefeld. And how Rob Liefeld is the man behind the brilliance, because it is he and only he who knows how to sew the pouches that Deadpool keeps putting on his outfits.
Classic.
Oh, yeah. The issue ends with a big full-page splash of Rob looking at the camera and smiling and talking about, you know, if he had it all again to do, he would change something. And I'm just, I don't know. It is a book that tries really hard to honor every era of Deadpool, from the movie Deadpool to the wacky murderer Deadpool to the completely over-the-top Joe Kelly Deadpool. And I feel like it does succeed on that level. None of these stories just completely fall apart into nonsense. But a lot of them do get right up to their nose in the deep end of the nonsense. But they've learned to dog paddle, so it's kind of okay. The best story in the book is probably Fabian's, where we actually see a young Wade in the Weapon X program deciding who he's going to grow up to be. And we see him as Deadpool in, you know, famous covers featuring Captain America and Spider-Man, and how he decides that he's going to make a costume that rips off, homages Spider-Man, but does it in a loving way. It's a cute moment. It's a really interesting bit. And then you have stories that are just not so good. And there are about 50 different jokes about pouches. So all in all, right down the middle. It's good, then it's not so great. It's wonderful, then it's weird, then it's sacred, and it's profane, and it's pretty much Deadpool. If you know Deadpool, you know what you're going to get from Deadpool. If you know only an era of Deadpool, there will be something in here that you will like, but something in here that will make you mad. If, like me, you're vaguely aware of all eras of Deadpool and you're just feeling like you're ancient because you were 20 when that comic came out, and now what good are you? Why don't you just, you know, turn into dust and blow away? 2.5 slices of meatloaf, 2.5 slices of my own mortality.
There
I'm just
you go.
Gonna sit in the corner and cry.
So you're probably going to throw this one into the quarter bin, and then you're going to kick yourself in 30 years when it's selling for a scribillion dollars.
I kicked myself when I paid $6 for it.
Well, see, there's that too. So anyway, all right.
For the record, the Kelly McGinnis run is when I was reading Deadpool.
Yeah,
it's good stuff. Did you read the issue where they reprinted an issue of Spider-Man and just drew Deadpool over all the Spider-Man figures? Yeah, it was wonderful because Aunt May was played by Al.
Yeah, by Blind, yeah.
Yeah, so anytime you'd see Aunt May or Peter, it would be Deadpool and Blind Al, and it was just...
Nice, nice. Anyway, that was last week from Marvel Comics. Let's jump to this week from DC Comics. Ashley, Dick is back.
Dick is back again, with his butt. Tell your friend. I know like 3 rap songs that aren't Hamilton. Yes. So Nightwing, fresh off of ye olde future state, future reborn, whatever. I read like 2 of the books and one of them was Nightwing because Nicholas Scott draws the hottest Nightwing around. But now Nightwing is back to its regularly scheduled numbering, which I only realized like halfway through typing my review into this, that this is not a hard Nightwing number 1. This is a soft Nightwing number 78, by Tom Taylor. Take that, CBR. I got his name right, Tom Taylor. And artist Bruno Redondo. Bruno Redondo, by the way, I think criminally underrated, and I really hope that this book puts him on the map. Tom Taylor, not criminally underrated, appropriately rated, and a darling human being with a delightful accent. And this is their new book together. And they basically, because everyone has been reading Future State for like a few months, have to remind you of who Dick Grayson is, because you might have forgotten. And we like cut a hole in his head and gave him a new name and whatever, whatever. So in a lot of ways, this issue is to gently remind you who Dick Grayson is and how beautiful his behind is and that Captain America wishes. It's also in a lot of ways to remind you that Tom Taylor doesn't just write scary things like Deceased and Injustice, which are very good in their own right. Nightwing number 78 reacquaints you with the characters. You see Dick when he is like literally a child boy as Robin, fresh off the death of his parents. You see him as Nightwing. There's allusions to his time as Batman because everything exists. Alan Grant Morrison in this history. And it relies a lot on his relationship to Barbara and his relationships to the bullies in his life, which is a theme that I really like because bullying has always been a strong theme for the Bat family and for Dick, the OG Robin specifically. It's freaking stunning. The colors are really good in this, which is unusual for a Bat book. Bat books tend to live in the dark. And as a sad soul, that really appeals to me. But there are colors in this Gotham City, and it's really interesting if you take that through the lens of this is how Dick Grayson views Gotham as this like bright, vibrant place full of promise with characters who are troubled and then turn good when they grow up and they learn their lesson. And Commissioner Gordon always has his back and Barbara is a strong presence. And Alfred also plays a really important role here. So it's kind of setting up all the pieces on the familiar chessboard of Bloodhaven, Coombe, Gotham, where this version of Nightwing and Dick Grayson is going to be playing. There's nothing super inventive in this issue, but knowing Tom Taylor, it is coming. But as a diehard to forever be in love with Dick Grayson kind of person, I loved it. I really enjoyed Future State and that take on Nightwing, but this is like, it's not comic book candy, but it's like macaroni and cheese, you know? It's like gives you everything, gives me everything that I want from this character by a writer I really like and an artist I really like. So I gave it 5 out of 5 because it was the best thing I read all week.
Now, is he back to being a police officer by day or what's his day job?
You know, that's a great question that I don't have the answer to.
Oh, because they probably didn't talk about it in that issue.
No, he's mostly Nightwing and he saves a puppy. There's puppies aplenty in this issue as well. So if nice. You are pro pity, you're going to love this.
You should also know that a Nightwing fan is traditionally known as a wing nut.
I'm not going to say that. That might be construed as inappropriate.
Yeah. I agree.
In the Major Spoilers pre-show, we asked Ashley Victoria Robinson whether she preferred to do acting on the stage or in front of the camera. You're going to have to become a Major Spoilers patron to find out what her answer is or was.
Yeah.
Or it's all in the past.
Or was is.
Depending on how this is released and how you listen to it, you probably listen to the pre-show before you listen to this episode. So there you go.
Why wouldn't you?
This week from Zenoscope Entertainment, it's Robin Hood, Cult of the Spider Queen. This is a one-shot story from Zenoscope Entertainment. This is everyone's favorite quiver-carrying heroine running through the streets of Manhattan, and she's been tasked to track down what has been happening with this mysterious spider cult and why all of these people are disappearing. And, of course, one thing leads to another. Giant, ugly spider monsters jumping out left and right in the sewers. Some horror moments, some Green Arrow-type moments, because she has now a quiver full of trick arrows. And in the end, we don't know if this is the end of the deadly Spider Queen. Actually, they set it up saying, the Spider Queen didn't actually die, and here's what you need to know. I rather enjoyed the story. I always dig these kind of like what horrors lurk in the sewers or in the back alleys of big major cities. And I think that they set up this Cult of the Spider Queen pretty good. I think this could have been a 3 or 4 issue miniseries, and they could have really amped up the tracking down stuff, the discovery of the cult and being captured, and then the final escape and showdown kind of thing over three or four issues. I don't know if the audience would stick around for it for that long. But for a one shot, an oversized issue, I thought it was really very good from the story wise, just from your B-movie monster stuff. I mean, if you're into that stuff, you're going to love this book. $5.99 is the cover price. The art was okay. There were some times where things didn't seem to fit right into the page, and I don't know if that was because of costume design or just because of the way that things were being colored or lit or whatever, but the art was fine. It doesn't have the cheesecake like you would expect from Zenoscope Entertainment books, so that can be a plus or a minus depending on your views of Zenoscope Entertainment books. Overall, I thought it was an enjoyable book. I'm giving it 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Robin Hood, Cult of the Spider Queen. It is out this week from Zenoscope Entertainment. Now, let us jump ahead to the far future of next week.
And next
Rodrigo,
week.
What is coming out from Dynamite Entertainment next week?
It is a rare moment where somebody is reviewing a Zenoscope book and doesn't have the most cheesecakey book on the lineup. I am reviewing Vampirella versus Purgatory. That's Purgatory with an I, number one. Back in the 90s, it got like real popular to have these like scantily clad, like bad girl comics or good girl comics, as they're often called. But I didn't understand why and didn't care, of course, because I was sneaking into comic book shops trying to sneak peeks at these comics. Your Witchblades, your Dark Child, your Lady Deaths, your Lady Devils, which is different from Purgatory, even though she looks like a lady who's a devil. And of course, Vampirella comes from like an older, more refined cheesecake lineage, but still. So the plot of this one is that Vampirella's mom, who, by the way, is also a sexy lady in a bikini, it's her birthday and her children are trying to please her by offering her some evil things for her to enjoy. And so one of them figures out how she can destroy the world. And so it kind of kicks off this race for Vampirella to beat her mother's minions, to all the human MacGuffins that could destroy the world if they were to come under her, if they were to get into her clutches or whatever. To complicate things further, Purgatory shows up. Like I said, Purgatory is like a red lady who is also wearing a bikini. She's got bad wings like Vampirella, but hers don't get put away. She's got horns, and I want to say a devil tail.
She has a tail.
Yeah, pretty sure she does have a tail. Of course, very confusing because Vampirella is not technically a vampire in the strict sense, even though she looks like a vampire, has vampire powers. She's actually a space alien. Although I don't know if this vampire, I don't know if this is a
yeah, I think she's in this alien version, she is still a space alien. Yes.
Yeah, she's still a space alien. And of course, Purgatory, who looks like a devil, is actually an Egyptian vampire goddess.
Right.
So don't ask me what Dawn is. She's not in this.
She's the embodiment of something or other.
Yeah, something or other. I used to have a friend in high school who, we would go to the comic shop and he'd only ever get two comics, Dawn and Spawn, which is basically the 90s for you.
Yeah,
anyway,
I dated a guy in college whose favorite superhero was Spawn, and I should have seen that for the red flag it was.
Sure. I'm sure there's plenty of Spawn fans out there that have figured it out.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just straighten out. So the art in this, interestingly, it's like everybody is like properly proportioned, like, you know, the girls, they still have like they're still like supermodels, but there's like no exaggeration to that, which is weird because these comics kind of started out that way, right? They were sexy girls who would then like murder people, and to see kind of like like a straightforward, like respectful treatment of their proportions is like weirdly jarring. But Sarah Ziska does a good job. There are monsters in this. There are normal people who are not evil space monster supermodels. And they look weird in comparison, but that's not really the artist's fault. It's because everybody is a 6 foot tall, sexy girl in a bikini who may or may not have bat wings at any given point. So altogether, yeah. I mean, like I said, I came up through into comics through the 90s. So yeah, I was reading Deadpool and also this stuff, but of course at the store, because if my mom ever caught me with like a Purgatory comic, I don't know what would have happened.
Literal Purgatory. She would never kill you.
She never did find, yeah, I mean, we're Catholic. She never found my Gen 13 number 2. So that's good at least. I'm going to give it 3 slices of meatloaf. You know, Memory Lane is great. Definitely an above average comic. I'm interested to see what happens next. But they don't really explain why Purgatory is involved. You know, and I feel like you kind of need that. It's like, I know that in 2021, Vampirella gets top billing because she's been a more enduring character.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that still, if you're going to do a crossover, you need to give really equal treatment to both members of the crossover. You kind of need to like respect both properties.
Matthew, what was that thing? Because I thought, didn't Dynamite do something recently where they had a bunch of like Purgatory and Red Sonja and all of these characters crossing over? Or am I thinking something else?
I don't remember Purgatory, but I know that Red Sonja and Vampirella have been hanging out together. And I know that there was Red Sonja and Vampirella Meet Betty and Veronica.
Yeah. I think they had some series of Crazy Girl series. Comics.
It's, what is it? Like something 5.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
And it
Fox
is
Force
like,
5.
No, it's Catch not up. Force 5. But it's something like, God, I can't remember it, but I've literally reviewed it on the show. But yeah, it's like a bunch of those like spooky girl comics.
The final 5.
Yeah. That was relatively recent, but it eludes me. I'll look it up.
Our dear listeners have already fired off tweets and Twitters and all of that stuff to let us know the answer
for us, which is great because we have bad memories because we're all old except for Ashley, who's an eternal sprite.
Yes. I was not born when Deadpool came out.
Oh,
and that's the story I'm sticking to.
Yeah, no, hey, hey, listen, I was trying to tell a story about 1996's Olympic Park bombing. And I was like, oh, were any of you students around at that time? And they're like, dude, we were all born after 9/11. So it's like, oh, all right. Thanks. Thanks for making me feel old. Anyway.
Oh, sure.
Let's move on to another topic.
You are old. They just, you know.
No, it's just funny. I think it's funny whenever I'm like, oh yeah, here's something that's in the relative history that people probably remember. And it's like, oh no, we were not born at that time. And it just takes you a moment to go, oh yeah, right. It's like 2021.
So, I mean, recently.
Great. I'm the young one.
Yeah. I was talking to someone and I realized that I had to give them context for the Pussycat Dolls. That's a like.
Oh yeah. That's an early 2000s thing, right?
Came out. More like 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm going to implode.
Careful there. We still have more show to get to. Dear listeners, if you want a little bit extra in your mailbox every week, and I mean, who doesn't want a little bit extra in their inbox every week, then head over to majorspoilers.com website, sign up for the Major Spoilers Weekly, where I share some thoughts that are on my mind each week, as well as some links to some reviews and things that you may have missed or other things that are going on over at Major Spoilers that you may have missed. This week, it was all about the Teen Titans. And you can find, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about next week. I thought about talking about how Batman really isn't Sherlock Holmes, but he is Moriarty. But we'll see how that comes apart in that argument.
That sounds fun.
I mean, I'll save it for the newsletter listeners. Head over to majorspoilers.com. Just scroll down to where you see sign up for the Major Spoilers email list. Put your name on it, and I will send you some stuff. once a week. Not going to fill up your inbox with a bunch of junk. Not going to sell your email to some hokum phone service or scammy email company, because I don't believe in that kind of stuff. I believe in cool people sharing cool ideas. And you can find out more over at MajorSpoilers.com. All righty, let's get into the conclusion of The Fade Out from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. I don't know which version you guys read. I've got the collected edition and everything. In the collected edition, they include all the letters pages for this. And I had forgotten, Matthew, that at the time that this series was coming out, Ed Brubaker was working on a little television series over at HBO called Westworld that you may have heard of.
I remember this. That was about that Western world.
Yeah. No, I was really surprised because I remember watching it, watching Westworld on television and seeing his name pop up. And I was like, what? And then I went and I think it was the next issue or something in the comic series where he's like, hey, everybody, I've been working on this TV series called Westworld. You may have seen it on the HBOs. So I thought that was kind of cool.
The one I have doesn't have the letters page.
Okay. This also then probably doesn't have all of the cool backup material, like, you know, the tragic story of, what's her name from Wizard of Oz, or the Jimmy Stewart story or anything
Judy
like
Garland.
That. Yeah. Judy Garland. Does it have the Judy Garland story in it?
No. All this has is a collection of the original covers.
Okay. Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why I would say if you can track down the original issues or get, I think the Comixology version has all the letters pages in there and everything. It's really fascinating because he goes into a history of, you know, tragedies in Hollywood, things that just when you hear the true tale of it, you know, the woman, I think in the very first issue, going all the way back to the first volume, he tells the story of an actress who was about to break it big, but she got suicidal and she jumped off the top of the Hollywood sign and killed herself. You know, it's those kind of tragic stories that he permeates throughout every issue of The Fade Out, which then brings us back around to this month's trade, the Fade Out Act 3, where our hero is starting to make connections and they're starting to put two and two together and how the studio execs have been, you know, basically raping children up at the up at one of their locations for years. And in fact, one of the murdered girls happens to be one of the people who was involved in that many, many years ago. And that sends our hero and his writing partner into a spiral of trying to seek revenge in this third act. And they kind of don't get that revenge that they're looking for, Rodrigo. And is that why you were looking for this satisfying conclusion in this book? Or what were you looking for? Because you said at the top of the show, in the first act of this show, that you were hoping for a little bit more finding the third act of this.
My sincere hope was that, like in most narratives, that the third act would be the shortest, but it's just exactly the same size as all the others.
Yeah, four issues.
Very disappointed. No. Honestly, I kind of like that the heroes, the quote unquote heroes, don't quote unquote win, because there's neither one of those people or situations in this book.
Right.
I was okay with that, because that does seem to be the sort of story that this is, right? You're not. There might be that expectation that, yeah, they're going to blow this wide open and everybody's going to figure it out. But from the beginning, and especially when you figure out who that creepy smiling guy is, last volume.
Yeah. Turns out to be an FBI guy.
Yeah. You realize that they're like, basically Charlie and Gil are in over their heads from the beginning. Right. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they even tried to do something seems like a terrible idea and turns out to be a terrible.
Yeah. I know Ashley hates the whole telling stories of Hollywood history kind of thing in this.
I do.
Which is fine. I totally appreciate that. And I kind of get where you're coming from, Rodrigo, because I think everybody wants this to kind of be an L.A. Confidential kind of ending where, yes, the heroes, quote unquote heroes, may get beat up quite a bit. But they come out on top and the bad guys always go down, et cetera, et cetera. But in this case, it's more, there are no good guys. I mean, there are bad guys, but there are no true good guys in this book. Charlie is not a good person. Gil is not a good person. The studio heads and the fixers are not good people. everybody that you meet, maybe the PR person, I forget what her name is, might be okay, Dottie. But
she's the best.
But I mean, even she is not perfect because she's all about lying and subterfuge and those kinds of things. So what we end up with, and again, this is my opinion, we end up with a story that's very gray, where you're not going to get that happy ending. In fact, you get a very tragic ending, which seems to follow along with the types of movies and stories that you were reading in the late 30s and 40s and 50s in the noir, you know, true crime genre. And so from that aspect where, you know, in the end, Charlie just goes back to doing what he does and, you know, has basically become a drunk like Gil, and his best friend is dead, by the way. It just kind of seems fitting for these characters and settings. And I want Rodrigo, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we follow these characters, but from the beginning, you know, they're not doing the right thing. Right. Charlie, right?
Yeah.
He wakes up, you know, with a dead starlet in the other room and, you know, doesn't fess up to it and doesn't contact even like their studio fixer, Gorilla.
Yeah.
He just kind of always kind of takes the coward's way out.
Mm-hmm.
And that like even includes when he like takes action, like he always takes action in such a way that it's always a bad idea. It's always so that he doesn't have to deal with other stuff. He starts drinking heavily so that he can have like the courage to do the things that he wants to do. You also find out in retrospect that he's already done a bunch of things that are kind of reprehensible.
Mm-hmm. So with his best friend's wife.
Right.
And many other things.
Yeah. So this is a character that's set up for failure, right? From the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when he mostly fails at the end, although he, you know, at the end of it, that girl's still dead.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people more people have died or lost their jobs or ended up in other places, but he's kind of generally okay. Like he gets out mostly physically unscathed at least. And it's like, that's kind of like the best that he could have hoped for.
Yeah.
It all makes sense, right? Like I'm reading this story and I'm not like, hooray, I'm glad that this happened at any point in the story, but it's like, well, it makes sense that that happened.
Right.
And then when we sort of get the lowdown on what actually happened to said starlet in the end, that also makes sense. And it, you know, kind of fits within the narrative.
Yeah. It kind of has a very Chinatown kind of ending, right? Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Just forget it. You're never going to understand any of this stuff. It's never going to make sense to you. You're living in a world of make-believe and dreams. What did you think was going to happen kind of stuff?
Right.
Ashley, I'm curious what your thoughts are in this final volume. If you feel like we've reached a satisfying conclusion to these characters' stories or not.
Satisfying, not for me.
What were you
accurate
hoping for?
To the tone and what the story is, yes. And so those are different things, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't particularly care for the fade out the same way I don't care for Mank. I'm not interested in a bunch of rich dudes who can't deal with the world, so they're alcoholics and we're supposed to venerate them because they're creative. I find that irritating at most. and I don't, as someone who like works in entertainment, you know, I want to believe that it's not like this, and it is like this, right? It was like this at the time. This is based on a series of stories, a series of real events, and there are like things that happen like this today, but I didn't enjoy the ending, but as you say, like per the murkiness of the characters and the gray moral areas that they inhabit, like this is, besides everybody dying, this is pretty much the way that you go. And I don't want to color people's opinions just because like, I didn't like it. I think this is a really well-made comic. I think it tells a story very clearly and it knows how it's going to do it. Obviously this is pitched for a movie. It's just a bunch of like Venn diagrams of stuff that I'm not that into. That's all.
Yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from. And that's, you know, no one's going to, I think less of you because of that. I'm always fascinated to find out, because somebody who works into this field, because this is in your area, you know, how that impacts you and whether you like it or not. And in this case, you tend not to like it.
I mean,
we can have a different discussion on Mank later on, but I'm curious, what was the ending you were hoping for in this? Were you hoping for the happy ending? Were you hoping that everyone went out in a blaze of glory? Were you hoping that?
I didn't ever expect a different ending. It's not necessarily that I was hoping for a different ending. You know, but I'm just such a sucker for like the hero's journey, and I like it when things end nicely, but this is the type of story that doesn't end well.
Yeah.
It's like when you watch Sunset Boulevard, like
that's what I was going
to
ask.
You don't have to see the dead body floating in the pool to know that there's going to be a dead body floating in the pool.
Do you like Sunset Boulevard, or is that falling into the same problems?
Yeah, I like Sunset Boulevard fine. I've seen it once.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say that there's a lot of elements in The Fade Out that are mirrored in Sunset Boulevard. It almost feels like if there was a narrator in this book, it would have been Charlie narrating his own story.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably wondering how I'm drunk in a bottle stumbling down the street at 2 a.m. Let me tell you. And then
you go back to the
beginning of that. So I mean, that's interesting. Matthew, what did you think of how this story ended?
I agree with Ashley in that I didn't like the ending, but I didn't see another way that it could have ended. You know, when you get into these stories, your Sunset Boulevards and your Casablancas and your White Heats and like that, the stories have to go where they have to go. You know, Jimmy Cagney has to die on a rooftop. Humphrey Bogart has to give up the woman he loves for the greater good, or, you know, for her marriage, whatever you want to do. But this one is one of those where from the beginning, it's very clear this is a noir story. This is going to have a bad end for everybody. And probably Gil and Charlie aren't coming out of it alive. I am glad that one of them did live. But I also didn't necessarily care for the fact that the character who had been set up as basically the antagonist for the first two volumes is actually the guy who helps him to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where they did surprise me, and they surprised me in a couple of pleasant ways, in that Brodsky was more than he seemed, and that at the very least, while people, you know, bad people weren't all punished, there were at least a couple of guys, you know, the evil old dude, what was his name? Mr. Camp.
Yeah, the Camp Studios, yeah.
I wouldn't call it justice, but he got an ending that he deserved, and you know, the closure of the murder, I wouldn't even say mystery, the murder plot line, whatever you want it to be, the closure of all that did come around in a way that was satisfying, in as much as any story designed to be an unsatisfying story can be satisfying, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess
one that's going to end with loose ends. It's going to be, yeah. You know, it's that pseudo-realism that you get in a noir story where nobody's going to get a happy ending and things are going to come around the way they come around. And, you know, somebody actually flat out says, we all know justice is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you expect that, if you know that going in, or at least as you're reading this story, that is kind of a for lack of a better word, a raison d'être. My French is atrocious, by the way. You get, you know, you kind of get a feeling that this is the proper ending. This is the appropriate ending, whether I liked it or not.
Yeah, I guess I just, for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, I've just been deep diving into everything noir, you know, reading classic detective tales by some of the great detective writers, diving in to all of the, you know, the noir movies like Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard, and the list goes on and on, Murder, My Sweet, et cetera, et cetera. And they all just, it feels like Brubaker has done enough of his research, or is aware at least of all of the tropes that you expect in these kinds of things where there isn't the happy ending and where everything is nebulous and everything is messy and everything is never wrapped up in a tidy bow and delivered to the audience with birthday cakes and sprinkles everywhere. So it feels like this fits right within the genre. And I agree with you totally, Ashley. As I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is totally going to be a movie in the next 5 years. If it's not already in the works in the next 5 years, this will be a movie, because it is just that kind of a story that I think people would latch onto. Yeah. Now, maybe people
you
want
get your Liam Neeson to play Brodsky.
No, I don't even know. I mean, in Hail Caesar, right? The studio fixer was it Thanos who played the fixer in Hail Caesar?
Josh Brolin.
Yeah, Josh Brolin. I want to say that Josh Brolin was played the fixer there. You need somebody like that to be the Brodsky, or you need somebody who would be like a Nick Nolte in his prime back in the 48 hours time period. That would be a good studio fixer. But you can just kind of see that this is saying, screaming, please turn me into a movie, which by itself is not necessarily a bad thing. I think Ed Brubaker is not somebody that just writes comics to say, is this going to be turned into a movie? Because Ed Brubaker has been around long enough to know that that's not the case, unlike a lot of
people. Oh, no, but this definitely has that,
Yeah. So I would be very kind of interested to see how this would be adapted and how it would play by audiences. You know, we talk about zombie movies play best in times of good economic prosperity. I don't think that, you know, the last 4 years would have been a good time for this movie to come out. But maybe over the next 4 years, if things start to, you know, improve economically, and I don't know if even the Me Too movement would have kind of put a stop to this kind of a movie or not.
I don't know that it would, because I mean, when you're making a movie about this, you can kind of frame it as a cautionary tale. You can frame it as, this is an example of a time when, you know, these things happened, and let's make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We have a lot of kind of depressing things that are going on right now. And so I don't know if a depressing tale like this, a depressing ending, is what people want. You know,
Orlando Bloom to play Charlie.
Who would you cast, Ashley?
Someone who could read lines and look good at the same time.
All right, so you get your Ashley Williams to play Charlie.
Well, who played, if you watch Hail Caesar, and I don't know how many of you have watched Hail Caesar, which is the Coen brothers. If you watch that, there is an actor for every part in this adaptation. Right.
But you can't just take Hail Caesar.
No, you don't. But the what's his name? Enric, the guy that played Hobie Doyle in Hail Caesar. He is your perfect actor who crashes his car up kind of person. Right. You can definitely see a Scarlett Johansson type character in this piece, just up and down the aisle. I think all of these, there's some very similarities in how people cast and how they look in this piece that I think would work. But
yeah, I always wonder if they did cast this, because our protagonist is kind of a nerdy type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if they wouldn't just, you know, put Sebastian Stan in the role.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but I feel like I want someone like Bradley Whitford 20 years ago in that part.
What about your Ansel Elgort or your, who's that kid with the face?
Oh, yeah, that guy. You're right.
You know the one.
I agree with you.
You know, let's just make him Kingsley Benadire. We just gave him a Marvel show. He was really, really good at One Night in Miami. Just give it to him. He's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that Alden Ehrenreich, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Han Solo is his name.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's who he is, yes.
But yeah, I don't see young Han Solo necessarily as a Charlie type. But
no, he's definitely.
No, not as a Charlie type, but the actor who was, who is closeted and smashed up his car and had to do the plastic surgery and everything.
James
his storyline. Basically, yes.
No, you know, not the other one.
I don't know if he's a good actor, but I think you cast Dylan O'Brien as Charlie.
Mm.
The guy from the Maze Runner.
Styles mm-hmm. in
yep, Styles and Teen Wolf. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Hmm. So now
how about your Pete Davidson's.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be an interesting take on Charlie.
Yeah. Now that who would be Gil then, Matthew?
If your Pete Davidson's gonna be Charlie, you probably want like a Horatio Sands type for Gil.
Just go straight up SNL in the casting?
Yeah, just all SNL. Yeah.
Huh. I would go John Gabris because I think he's actually a very good actor and really, he's like very, very funny. And I think that's a character who's going to need someone who can bring some freaking levity to the scene.
Yeah.
I would say Charles Durning, but Charles Durning is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Who plays the dad on the silver, what is it? The Steinbergs, the silver,
the Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs, that's it.
Jeff Garland?
Yeah. He'd do that, I think.
Garland would be interesting.
Yeah. If you could go back to 1980 and pull up, what's his name? Norm. I think he'd be a good Gil too.
George Wendt.
Yeah.
I know. I was also thinking like William Peterson 25 years ago.
Yeah. Especially the thing with something like this is like, you think and you're like, who would be in this? And it's like, you immediately go back to people that have played this sort of role.
Uh-huh.
You know, right. During the spikes where this kind of thing has been popular, which mm-hmm. is basically, you know, like once in the 30s, the 40s, the 80s. It's right. Jack Nicholson should just play all of these characters.
Right. You know, ironically, my big choice for Charlie is probably too old because he's, you know, Stephen and my age. But I think Tom Lennon from The State would be an amazing Charlie. But I feel like 50 is a little too old for the character. But you know, you get to that point, you're like, okay. And Thomas Ian Black as Brodsky, the head of security.
Yeah.
He's a great Instagram.
Man, if only we had an article or a feature over at majorspoilers.com that would cast imaginary actors for comic book projects.
It's too bad. We don't have anybody who does that.
Yeah, we don't actually. So it's too bad. We haven't had one of those in decades, but you can find the archive over at majorspoilers.com.
I'm just bad at this.
What is the bottom line now that we've looked at all 12 issues in this series? What's your recommendation, Matthew?
It's going to sound harsh, and I don't mean it the way it sounds, but prepare for disappointment and you will enjoy this book. If you come in, and first of all, don't read it in three segments a year apart. That's a rookie mistake. You hate to see that. What you do is you get
there was a big gap between issues 6 and 7. That was, I want to say, like a couple of months.
You can't trust comic books. Comic books are
crap. We're writing for TV.
Exactly. What you do is you get all three, you know, you go, you buy all 16 issues, or all three trades, put them in a stack. You sit down on a Saturday afternoon with a cup of tea and your comfy socks, and you just read this and know that it's going to end badly. Just pick up that first page, take a deep breath and say, Uncle Matthew says this is going to end badly, and dive in and just immerse yourself in it. And I feel like it's a winner. You know, anything with Brubaker and, Sean Phillips. Thank you. I feel bad because, you know, he's the artist, co-creator, the whole thing.
Yep.
Sean Phillips, the co-creator of this, is amazing. And I feel that Sean Phillips should definitely get a lot of attention. But more importantly, what Brubaker and Sean Phillips have done here is a good book, but it's also a very, very stylized book. And it does have a particular genre/tone to it that can be off-putting to maybe a modern audience. So if you love noir already, definitely buy it. If you're confused and frightened by what we mean by noir, maybe do some work before you pick it up, but I would still say pick it up and at least check it out.
Yeah. Ashley, final thoughts from you.
So I definitely agree with the assertion that this reads better in one go. I think that's probably true of all mysteries because it becomes deeply unsatisfying to have to wait long term, which is why people got so frustrated with Lost. That's a jab at Jason and Jason only. If you like noir, if you like hard boiled, if you like gumshoe or any kind of synonym thereof, this is a really well crafted book. It is a beautiful book. It ends an appropriately dire ending, which I disagree doesn't mean it doesn't end well, but it your mileage on it may vary. So I think if you are into any of the things, or if you're into old Hollywood, if you are into any of those keywords, then I think this is absolutely like, buy it, pick it up. It's a beautiful book. It will look cool on your shelf and it will be a great talking piece. This is a great comic to give to people who don't think they like comics.
Yeah.
However, if like myself, you happen to fall outside of the Venn diagram on one or more of those things, unless you are specifically looking for inspiration to create or undertake something similar, I would say maybe borrow the first volume and see how much mileage you do get out of it. Because maybe it'll surprise you. Maybe it will confirm your biases and you'll go, that was a really well-made book. That's just not for me.
Yeah. If you enjoy Chinatown, the LA Confidential, the Black Dahlia, those kinds of movies, then I would say that this is a must buy book for you. I'm the person, I love this book. I just top to bottom, I bought it in its single issues. I bought it in the individual three trade series. And then for Christmas, I asked for it in the collected omnibus edition. The big hardbound version. I just love this story. This is done exactly the way it's supposed to be done. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean a happy ending, but I think it sets out to tell this kind of a sad story about sad people and their sad lives. And I think it does it exceptionally well. The art is fantastic. This is not something for the youngins. As we've talked in previous episodes of the Major Spoilers podcast, there's nudity, there's rape, there's child molestation, there's a murder, there's violence, there's alcohol, drugs, all that stuff. Is in there. Everything that you find in the noir stuff, it's very seedy in that sense, but it's still a fantastic story with great art. And for me, this is a must-buy book for anybody that, as Ashley would say, falls inside that Venn diagram. Rodrigo, you get the final word this week.
Yeah, I think the Fade Out, Act 3, and definitely all three volumes of it are really well put together and firing on all cylinders, but it is a very specific story, right? Most of us here on the panel are going to be completely fine reading a superhero story. But this is, this is that noir stuff. This is that old Hollywood stuff. And I know lots of people who just eat up old Hollywood stuff. Like, they love it. All of the, it's like, and you can get that in comedies, you can get that in like the Judy Garland, like A Star Is Born. You can get that in this. You can get that in Singing in the Rain. You can see all of that stuff in those places. And those tropes exist equally well. Or Hail Caesar. All of those exist equally well. So if you want to see those tropes, those old Hollywood tropes, in a dark and sort of insidious mystery, this is really the story for you. And if you don't care about that, this is possibly going to be a tough read, unless everything I said also like makes you interested.
There you go. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We're going to wrap up our episode right there. And I want to thank you for listening to this show and being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
As always, we want to hear your feedback, so join the rest of the cool kids and me at the Major Spoilers Discord server to share your thoughts and reactions to this and every episode.
Or even better, send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com.
Oh, and don't forget, you can support this show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
We're going to be back next week because we're going to be talking about a television show, specifically the Harley Quinn show on HBO. Why? Well, because we know that you love comics. We do, too. And this is directly tied to into that world. And we will talk with you soon.
If I had the X-ray vision of Superman, I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Find a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler.
Bombstar Raven.
rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun be in the middle east with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.